Civic City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting is now in session. It's June 11th, 2024. It is 5:01. We are meeting virtually and in person via Teams, Microsoft Teams, in person at Kiawanda Community Center, Faye Jensen Room. Call to order. I'm now going to read the rules of conduct. Maybe. All cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical conduct. Be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussion. They'll call the roll. Director Price?
Here.
Director Anderson?
Here.
Director Stradotska?
Here.
I'm Director Donahue, the chair. Now read the the minutes of May 14th, 2024 business meeting. Are there any corrections or additions?
I had some comments I'm trying to find here. Hold on. Under the guest questions and comments, the paragraph referencing Darcy Jones as a guest at the meeting, it says that he said the cost of housing in Pacific City is due to continuing development. My memory, which is pretty distinct, is that he said the community development office. And I believe that should be corrected and it should be capitalized. Community development should be capitalized.
Okay.
And one other, the other thing was under the chairman director comments, where Mr. Wesley said he'd spoke to Director Price speaking about acquainting them to the board. I think that came out a little vague. The subject was introducing new staff people and acquainting them with the board and vice versa. And so I think maybe that could use a little clarification because it was specifically about new staff.
Yep. I had the same too.
Okay. And the history of that is that that's something that we used to do routinely, is new staff would always come to a board meeting early in their tenure so that everybody get to meet each other. But I think we had a good discussion there, but I think the minutes could use a little brush.
Was that when we talked about having the
barbecue,
like a barbecue,
yeah,
the early picnic thing or something? Okay.
Yeah, as a supplement or alternative.
Right.
Are there any? Is there any other discussion, additions, or corrections? If not, I entertain a motion.
I'll move that the minutes of the May 14th. 2024 business meeting be approved as corrected.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to approve the business meeting minutes for May 14, 2024. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Unanimously carried. The minutes for the special meeting, May 15, 2024. Are there any additions or corrections? Pretty simple meeting.
I make a motion that we approve the minutes of the special meeting on May 15th, 2024 as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to approve the May 15th, 2024 special meeting minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried unanimously. Finally, we have the budget meeting for May 21st, 2024. Are there any additions or corrections to that minutes.
I have a correction. Bill Height was not in attendance.
Was it?
Bill Height was not in attendance, and the minutes reflect that he was.
Who was it?
It was Scott.
Okay, we have one correction. Are there any other additions or corrections? I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the May 21st, 2024 budget meeting as presented and amended.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to approve the business or the budget meeting minutes for May 21st, 2024. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carried unanimously. The financial report, accounts payable for May 15th and May 31st, 2024. Are there any additions or corrections or questions concerning the accounts payable? I had one question. I can find it. There it is. On May 30th, we had two checks made out to Chase Manhattan. One was for $14,874.25. The other was $344,150. It says it was a loan payment. Precisely what were those loans? Was one the larger one for the wastewater treatment plant?
They're actually combined. The smaller portion is the interest, and it is for the go bond for Horn Creek.
For the what?
It's the go bond for Horn Creek.
Oh, okay. Both of them?
Yeah. Yeah, the smaller portion is the interest on the loan.
Okay.
And this is a once-a-year payment,
that's
right?
Kind of,
it's an annual payment.
Yeah, yeah, I assumed as much.
It will be paid off in 2027.
We're paid off. Oh, okay. All right, that was the only question I had. Anybody have any other concerns?
Nope.
Okay, if not, I entertain a motion.
I'll move that the financial report for May 15th and May 31st be approved as presented.
Accounts payable, you?
Yes, I'm sorry, accounts payable.
We have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second to accept the accounts payable for May 15th and May 31st, 2024. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried unanimously. Okay. Are there any questions about the general ledger for 23-24? Okay, we'll move on to item six, the manager's report. John?
Thank you, Tom. So a couple of highlights from the manager's report. We haven't been able to make much progress with the wage survey. Interestingly enough, the classifieds of the Headlight Herald, it looks like everybody in the county was looking for an operator in training. And it's pretty clear, at least from what I was able to see. We're getting some feedback.
That's me, just a second.
It's pretty clear from what I was able to see that at least the OIT level position is probably one position that we know will have some changes.
Yeah.
It looked like we were lagging behind on that particular position. That's just one position, but it was interesting to see, and it is somewhat revealing, at least for one of our positions. Of course, we've got many positions that we want to be able to do comparables with. I'm hoping to be able to get more meaningful progress done on that between now and our July meeting. Mentioned I don't currently have any updates for the board regarding the Rupel contract issue other than what the board already knows. Mentioned that the paving work early approved by the board will be done the week of the 9th. They finished today.
Yay.
And it looks nice. If anybody wants to come by and take a look, it's really a big improvement on an area of our road within our compound that has been in dire need of repair for quite some time. So progress made there. It really looks good. Wanted to mention that we did lose a position, or we did lose an employee last month. The good news is that we completed a round of interviews. We interviewed, it was four, I think maybe five different candidates, and one of them really stood out, and we have made an offer to this person. His name is Hunter Bowler. He's a local guy who has 3 years of experience in this type of work with the city of Tillamook. Spent a 6-year stint in the Army, and we are excited to bring him on board. He's almost got through all of the pre-hire contingencies. We're just waiting for the results for one more. And I think there's a good chance that he'll report to work as early as Monday.
Oh, wow.
Good.
So,
excellent.
Yeah. So we're pretty happy about that. Also, I wanted to mention that Bob Pippinger, who's one of our newer employees, he's been with us about a year and a half now. He obtained a competent person certification. And this is a little different than the normal operator certifications. A competent person is somebody who's authorized to evaluate and enforce safety precautions in relation to excavations. We're talking about excavations that are deep enough that might require shoring or trenching to help prevent cave-ins. That analysis requires, that job requires doing analysis of the soil, determine what types of soil types the excavation is taking place in. Obviously, some soil types are more prone to sloughing than others. And a lot of ours is sand, and that is one of the most dangerous types of soils to do excavations in. And I'm pleased that we now have somebody with the proper certifications to oversee that, not only the excavations that our employees do, but the excavations our contractors do. So I just wanted to recognize Bob for achieving that. It was a 30-hour course, and my understanding is he did a lot of it on his own time. So very pleased about that.
Congratulations to him. We're pleased too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other than that, I've repeated a couple of things here. I sometimes leave things in here for more than 1 month, just as a reminder. But that is the manager's report, Tom.
Thank you. Any questions for John concerning his report? Okay. And we'll move on to unfinished business.
Oh, so did you, when you interviewed for the position that I forget his name already got?
Hunter.
Were there other candidates there that looked like we might be able to hire for any other opening?
Well, there was a couple that didn't quite make the cut this time that may be, you know, maybe good candidates for us for a future opening. We did have a couple of late applicants come in too after we'd already made the offer. I've let those people know we'll keep their application on file. And next time we have an opening, I'll reach out to them to see if they're still in a position that they're interested in the job.
Okay. I was just curious because, you know, if what the candidate pool looked like, if it was, you know, if there was quite a few candidates out there that were even interested.
Well, I'm pleased.
Sounds like there are.
There are. And I'm pleased that the last couple of openings we've had more response to those openings than we have had in previous openings.
That's good. It's good for us.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means for the economy in general, but it's good for us.
Yeah, not too long ago we were trying to fill a position for months.
Yeah.
6 months.
Yeah. So we've had really good luck with that so far, and that makes it much easier for us.
Okay.
All right. Nothing else. We'll move on to item 7, unfinished business. Item 8, resolution 24XXX, investigative policy, harassment policy, director. This particular resolution is pointed toward director's duties and responsibilities mostly. And we are just finishing up the final touches. We've had some preliminary communication with our legal folks as well as our HR as we were progressing through this. We just found another resolution, I believe it's 19-05, that references directors' responsibilities as far as voting and abstaining during meetings. And that was also part of our director's duties. So I added that to the resolution. The purpose was to do a major house cleaning of what responsibilities and duties directors have, to basically write them down outside of what the general guidelines are from Small District Association of Oregon. So this is a major house cleaning type of resolution, as I've mentioned before. So adding this final thing to it, the final resolution 1905, so that we only have one resolution to deal with instead of four. We still have to bounce that off of legal and HR, our HR consultant. So I am hopeful that we will have a final draft document to present to all of the directors next month. That's what we can vote on, and so we'll make sure we have. It's a large document. It's like 30 pages. That's what it's gotten to. So you're gonna need to study it. I think you've already looked at most of it, but it's the small things that need to be changed are coming from opinions from legal and our HR consultant. After I just added this latest thing, John, do you have anything to add?
Well, for the record, I wanted to say that the primary reason this isn't done yet is because I was late getting it to our HR representative. So I just wanted to make that clear. We're waiting for a review from our HR representative, which I think is, I don't think she'll look much at the resolutions, but the investigative policy, the harassment policy are the things that we're going to want her to look at. And, Tom's worked really hard on this, and I feel bad that I was so late getting it to our HR person that she was not able to provide her comments in time for Tom to incorporate those. And we will definitely make sure that it's ready to go by July's meeting. And I should be getting her feedback on that next week sometime. One of the difficulties is right now she's working on the report related to our employee interviews. So I've kind of piled a couple of things on her. And we want to make sure she gets the report for the employee interviews done first, because there's still a lot of things that have to be done. My self-evaluation, the board's evaluation, there's still a lot to do for the authority manager review. When she's done with this, she'll turn her attention to the resolution, and she'll give us feedback about that.
Okay. Thank you, John. Under unfinished business, item B, our BLM property trail closure.
Yes, so as I reported last month, we've decided to go ahead and fund the maintenance on the trail. The contractor is going to do the work, has still not freed up his schedule enough to do the maintenance. I was told a couple of weeks ago when I asked for an update that he'd have it done in a couple of weeks, or shoot for a couple of weeks to have it done. He couldn't commit to an exact day or days for the work, but right now we're kind of at the mercy of the contractor, waiting for the contractor to come and perform the work. And I have made it clear that we've got a trail opening pending this work. So hopefully we can get them here soon. Once that maintenance is done, at the direction of the board, we will reopen the trail. I provided a proof of the long-term signage, the trail open signage that will be in place. It's compliant with what our insurance company has recommended as permanent signage. And if there's any thoughts or comments about the sign itself, I'd like to hear.
I just wanted to say I walked the trail last night, the entire thing. So someone has been up there not in the last week or two and removed some trees. Do you know who did that? Because yeah. There's one pretty big
Josh
one.
Josh was here last Tuesday, I think, when you were gone.
Oh, he was here last Tuesday.
I didn't know that he was doing any work, but I know that he was here.
Well, it's possible that he just showed up and did the work and didn't tell me it was done.
So I don't know what the scope of his work was supposed to be, but there's no trees on the trail.
Good.
So they have all been, cleared.
Did you see any improvements in the bench area? Because I know that was a big part.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Good.
So there's some logs there for your feet that have been put there by the bench.
Just to help shore things up, too?
Yes. Yes, so and that part looks great.
Okay.
There are some, there's a lot of roots. Some of them are pretty small, but there's a few roots that stick up high enough that if you're not paying attention, you could trip and fall. So I think, and they're easy to remove. You just have to go clip, clip.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed by hearing this. Nobody stopped by the office to tell me.
And he didn't get back to you and tell you that
And he didn't get back to me and to tell me that it had been finished or anything.
Yeah,
so
he hasn't sent an invoice either. So.
Well,
what's
maybe,
that?
Maybe
he hasn't sent an invoice.
Maybe he had some spare time and he just went and got something done.
Well, so I don't know that that it's done.
Well, I'll reach out to him, try to reach out to him tomorrow. He's very busy, so sometimes it takes a day or two to get back. But, I wish I had known that. And if that's the case, I'll call them, confirm, but if the work is done,
might be started.
Well, he has
or
an
at
invoice
least started.
So it's not done yet, or we would get an invoice, right?
Well, potentially. Sometimes they wait a month or two to send an invoice.
Well, when they're really busy. When they're really busy.
Well, let's find out the status.
If it's done, we'll get the signs up and we'll put this issue behind us.
And I think the sign looks great.
Yes.
The sign that was with the paper.
Well, I was trying to go for the green light go versus the red stop. I don't know if that had any subliminal effect, but
it looks good. There were other people on it. There were a lot of footprints on it. While we were up there at the bench, some more people came up and, we're talking about how beautiful it was up there and everything. So I, for one, am really pleased to see that we're making progress with it.
Good.
I just have a question about the sign. I'm just wondering why we're ordering a sign from Ontario. There's a very good sign place in Newport.
Well, the only reason that I ordered the sign from them is when the discussions about closing the trail with our insurance agent were underway. She had sent me a proof of the sign that several local communities had used. And on that proof, there was an address down below. And so I just ran with it because they already had the proof and could just go. And then, of course, when it came time for the follow-up sign, I just went with the same thing. So we will go with a local company going forward, but that's the only reason. It probably, I didn't even think about it in that regard. I just saw a fast way to get to something done, and I ran with it.
Oh, it's fine. It's not like it's a great big, huge project or anything. Yeah. I just like to keep as many things as local as we can.
I think that's a great idea. And well, we do strive to do that, and that should have been in the back of mind as I was working on this project as well. But it is good to know that there's a local sign company, because this won't be the last time we need signs. So I will definitely keep that in mind.
Okay. Thank you, John and ladies. Let's move on to item C, the South Tillamook County Emergency Volunteer Corps Emergency Supply Shed proposal. Where the heck are we with that?
Well, I did reach out to our legal counsel again after our discussion at the last meeting, and I do want to clarify one thing. I had presented a hold harmless agreement to the board at the last meeting. When we reach out to the law firm that we've worked with traditionally over the years, there's one person that I usually start with. His name is Noah Jarrett. He's a very good attorney, and it really doesn't matter what I need. I always start with him, and he'll refer me to a specialist, or if it's small stuff, he'll just kind of knock it out himself. When I approached him about reviewing the hold harmless agreement prior to our last meeting, he was not available. But he did recommend another attorney to us, and I before our last meeting, I met with that attorney, provided them a copy of the MOU, kind of described the proposal. And at the time, the attorney told me that he felt that the hold harmless agreement as written was pretty strong. And I came to the board and let them know that, you know, we got the thumbs up from our legal on this. Well, after a meeting last month where we wanted to explore the contract thing, I reached back out to Noah, and he was available this time, and I asked Noah to take a look at that agreement too, and Noah thought it would be wise to add a little bit more stuff to it. So I just wanted to clarify, you know, if there's any confusion about that, how that all transpired. I did talk to Noah about the agreement again. We looked over the agreement again. I did let our attorney know, our legal counsel know, that there was some concern from the board that a memorandum of understanding did not quite rise to the muster of what we wanted to see here in terms of something that would be better described as a contract. And at that point in time, Noah said it really makes no difference what you call it. It doesn't matter if it's a memorandum of understanding, a contract. And just for emphasis, he said you could call it a pink elephant if you want to. What he said is as long as the terms and conditions are spelled out in the document, and as long as that document is signed by the parties in the agreement, it is legally binding. Now, unlike most contracts we've all seen, this memorandum of understanding doesn't use a lot of legalese, thou shalt do this, and so, you know, what he said is, you know, what I do is go back to the board, have them review it again, suggest ways to improve or to tighten up any of the existing language, and then as long as the other party agrees to those changes, we should be just fine. You know, one thing too about a contract is a contract is generally a standalone document where you've got all the indemnification clauses and all of the terms and conditions in a single document. In this case, what we've got is the memorandum of understanding from the Volunteer Corps, and we've got a supplemental document that has the indemnification clauses. And he says that's just fine. You know, that's not all that uncommon. Unless there are any continuing concerns from the board, and he even offered to meet with the board to talk about the agreement more if we would desire that. But what I would suggest at this point is if the board's comfortable with the indemnification clauses, and I've now had two attorneys give their thumbs up on it, and if the board would individually review that and suggest any language changes that we would like to see. And I know you've already recommended a couple, if you wouldn't mind repeating those. In the next week, if the board would review that and provide feedback, then I will incorporate those into the agreement. I think most of the comments should be designed to tighten things up so they're not quite so ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. So you just want to, any concerns that we have, just send them to you.
Just send them to
me.
And
then you'll collate and figure out which needs to change something, which ones don't.
That's right.
That's great.
And so I'll combine those. And then at that point, we now have revisions to the Hold Harmless Agreement that
look good.
The organization, the other organization will have to review and approve. We'll have changes to the MOU that the other organization will have to review and approve. Mm-hmm. And if the board would like to pursue as a first option having a secondary fence with a secondary outside gate, so once the shed is built, they don't need to rely on us to get them in. We won't have a situation where we necessarily have shared keys to our infrastructure. Mm-hmm. If that's something the board would like to see, just let me know. I'll make that our first option. They've already, the South Tolma County Emergency Volunteer Corps has already informally indicated to me that that's not going to be a deal breaker at all.
Good.
So I can see some benefit to that in terms of any uneasiness we have about having a combination lock with multiple people having the combination, or a keyed lock with other people having the key. I do want to say the intent was never for them to just walk into the facility unannounced. Even without the secondary enclosure, the intent was just for maintenance needs at the shed. They would always contact us, and we would always escort them in there.
Right.
But this kind of takes any burden off of us in the event of an emergency in terms of how people are going to get in there. And so I think it's a pretty decent idea. So if that's something that the board feels is important, please indicate that as well in your comments and your feedback. And I will be sure to write that into the first redraft of the agreement. So that's really all I have to update the board about on this issue. Are there any lingering concerns or additional questions?
No, I think if you've gotten, if you've gotten sound legal advice on the memorandum of understanding and the Hold Harmless, I think we're good. I mean, I'm good. I don't know what more language I would tighten up. I'm not really much of a legal writer.
So you're asking for. You're asking for our input the next week or so, and then you'll present it, and we'll vote on it next month.
Well, we can do that, or what we can do is if I can get your comments within the next week, I'll spend the following week rewriting it. I'll send it to the board.
If there's anything to rewrite.
If there's anything to rewrite. I can send it to the board and for review, and then it seems like we still need the board to give a final okay on it.
Absolutely.
So, and it seems a public meeting is an appropriate place to do that. I hate to kick this down the road one more month, but I think this should put a bow on it, I believe.
It sounds like it.
Does that sound okay?
I'm glad to have the legal consultation on it.
And, yeah.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I'll just send you the notes as I wrote them last month.
Please. And the only reason I'm making you do it again is just so I get them all together.
And then you and I can, if anything's unclear or which one of these do you mean or that kind of stuff, let me know and I'll come over and we can talk about
I
meant.
Yeah, I think one of the goals should be is, well, if we feel like we want some new provisions like the fenced enclosure, you know, that's one thing. But really look at it with an eye toward trying to tighten up the language, if you know what I mean. So,
all right.
Okay.
All right.
So that sounds like we have a pretty good consensus on that. We'll work on that next week or so and get with you. All right. Item D, authority manager review process. John, you mentioned earlier that the employee interviews have been taken care of by our HR consultant. I haven't received her comments yet, but I will forward them to the board as soon as I do. And then I would like to give at least a two-week time period for the board to review those comments and to take our standard form now and fill it out. And I believe we have, what did we do last time? 3 weeks or something?
I think that sounds right, but I can't remember.
Remember that I think how we usually do the process is I do my self-evaluation.
Right.
And the board takes that into consideration as well as the employee feedback.
Correct.
And then they write their evaluation.
Okay, so your anniversary date, if memory serves, is July 28th?
19th.
Well, I was close.
Well, you got the right month.
You were close, yeah.
So the latest I've heard from our HR representative is her goal is to have the report done by the end of the week. She said, realistically, it might be sometime early the following week. And I have asked her to send that directly to you, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
And I know last year we had put together a little calendar for how this needs to all play out. Would that be beneficial to the board so
Absolutely.
Everybody knows
yep.
when their deadlines
I'll
are?
I'll review what we did last year, and
okay.
As soon as I get the document from her, I will put that calendar and just give a note out to everybody what we're doing.
Okay.
I expect, as soon as I get those comments, and I'm expecting to get them in a week, so.
Yeah.
We'll have it done probably, if things work out, before your anniversary, but I doubt it.
Well, I think that's aggressive.
That hasn't happened for a long time, but
yeah.
Yes, let's go.
I mean, let's make it a goal, but
considering
where we're at in the process, that might be a little aggressive.
I think we've got things streamlined quite a bit, too, so this shouldn't be that difficult.
So when are you going to have your self-evaluation in, do you think?
Well,
I mean, just a guess.
Well, I was waiting for this meeting to try to determine, you know, possibly a time frame.
Okay.
I think at this point, there's nothing that should stop me from starting to work on it.
Okay.
So, I'll be honest, I don't think I'm going to get it done this week, but probably next week. I need to get it to the board. Because the board's got to review all this stuff and then put together theirs.
I'm not trying to pressure you. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yes, she is.
I'd like
to. We can think ahead as to when we're going to get
it. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to say tomorrow, but that's
no,
not.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I just have a question. So I was pretty new last year when we did your evaluation, but if I remember correctly, as part of the evaluation, we gave you, we talked about salaries, is that right?
We didn't talk about salary per se. Are you talking about in terms of a merit increase or something
like
that?
Well, you got an increase.
Huh?
We did that in the emergency or the
executive session.
Okay. Yes.
That was at the very end.
Yeah, I wasn't
process.
Part of that.
All right, so my question is, this doesn't have anything to do with that. My question is, what mechanism is in place for giving employees raises?
Currently?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's several. I can think of three. So there's an annual merit in an annual evaluation that I do that I try to get it as close to their anniversary date as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got standard forms with, you know, work behaviors and core competencies, mm-hmm. and I give scores. So it's a pretty standard evaluation process I give. At that point in time, I make it a determination about an annual merit increase. But there are other ways too. For example, if somebody gets a certification, they get a dollar more an hour. I've also, because it was never really clearly defined before I got here, we've got an operator in training, we've got an operator one, we've got an operator two, and an operator three. But before I got here, there was really nothing well defined in terms of what does it take for an employee to move from one level to the other, and it's essentially an internal promotion, mm-hmm. right? So I've developed a point system to where somebody gets 5 points, they're eligible to go from an OIT to an operator one. If they get 10 points, they can go from an operator one to an operator two. People get 1 point for every year of experience or service. They also get 1 point for every certification. And so once an employee reaches these milestones, then they're eligible for a promotion to the next operator level. And that also comes with a acknowledgement or recognizing the promotion, a bump in pay as well.
Okay, that sounds great. Sounds wonderful. Is there, do you do across the board cost of living increase or anything like that?
No, we typically don't do that. The merit increases, I usually keep cost of living economic indices in mind, you know, at least in the back of my mind as I give merit increases. That, just strictly a focus on that, is typically not done. But the wage survey, if I get it done, will be a method to kind of catch that up if we need to. Yeah.
Okay. Because it seems like, you know, right now we're getting applications for vacancies, and that's wonderful. But sometimes we're not keeping them very long, and we've lost a couple of people recently. And so I think doing the wage survey is really an important thing to get done, and we need to be looking at salaries to keep people, when we get good people on board, to keep them.
And yes, and another thing I try to do is I try to, I'm mindful of, if I give one person a big raise, well, how does that impact the wage structure on everybody around it? And, you know, so I try to make decisions regarding that maintain that balance. You know, for example, we were just talking about possibly us being on the little low side for the OIT, although we're getting applicants. We have to remember that. We have to remember that. But the reality of it is if a wage survey indicates that an OIT should hypothetically be bumped up $2 an hour, well, then I have to take a look at where all the longer-term employees are impacted by that, because a $2 or $3 an hour is going to put them so close to people that have been with us much longer, that I have, you know, it's a consideration.
Yeah.
So,
I think once you get the wage survey, once you get those numbers, then you can, I mean, it's not like just because we get that, we're going to immediately do something. You know, we're going to have to figure out how to, you know, enact that or make those changes to consider all those levels and all the positions. It just makes sense.
Yeah, we have to keep that balance. Yeah. We have to maintain that harmony.
Right.
We have to maintain that that spacing.
Right. And even though that wage survey may say, you know, it needs to be bumped up $2, we may say, well, we can't really do that, you know, so let's bump this up $1.50 or something. I'm just throwing numbers, but
sure.
I don't think that, I mean, if even if we have the wage survey done, it's not like we're going to be committed to those numbers, I don't think. It's just some information that we can use to figure out how to do it.
Recruiting and training new employees takes time and it takes money. Yeah, it doesn't come for free. So we're better off to pay people a little bit more and keep them.
Keep them, yeah.
Than to have to spend your time and money advertising and stuff.
And you're right. And because we're a small utility, we're too small to have specialists. So everybody's got to learn all the jobs, which means that that only lengthens that learning curve. Mm-hmm. And it only increases our investment.
Right.
And because we're not just teaching somebody to run the wastewater treatment plant. We want that person to know how to run the water plant and to be able to work in the field and, you know, with the collection and the distribution system. That is a lot of training, and that is a big investment.
It is, yeah.
And we need to protect that investment.
Yes, we do.
You mentioned here, I think it was last meeting, that you had two inquiries of employees where they were concerned that this survey we're trying to do would lower their wages. So,
well, there a couple people expressed concern that it might have the opposite effect, and I made sure that they understood that this never cuts people back, regardless of
right.
the results. I mean, this is only going to benefit them and the utility as well.
Now, oftentimes we don't have a lot of employees here at our meeting, so can I safely assume that after a board meeting you have a meeting of all the folks that work for us to kind of give them an idea of what's going on and what we're thinking?
Well, I always communicate utility issues even at high levels. I make sure the staff are brought up to speed on those issues because, well, for a couple of reasons. It's just good management. It makes the employees feel like they've got a deeper understanding of, you know, our direction and our mission, and it also helps them to feel like they're invested in that. So I always do that, but I have notified the employees that the board is interested in doing a wage survey, that we are going to conduct a wage survey, but I've also made it clear to them that the goal of this is not to reduce salaries.
Right.
The goal is to make sure we're competitive.
Yeah.
So
that would be a natural fear, but yeah, absolutely
fear,
has
yeah.
nothing to do with it.
Well, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. If there are no other comments.
Thank you.
Well, let's move on to item 8, new business. The next two items are kind of very similar, and we're going to be taking some time with this because it's kind of complicated. But we'll start off with item A, resolution 0502, mobile dwellings and mobile businesses. Can you give us a sense of where you're at with this, John?
Yeah, well, what spurred this is, and we've had members of our community, flirt with mobile food trucks as a potential business venture before. What we've seen come through recently is much, much bigger, much more beyond what the rumblings we've heard about this in the past. We've got multiple people that are interested in adding food trucks to their lots, their properties, their businesses. And some of these involve very well-established business people in the community. So these are legitimate inquiries. And I think within a week, Rochelle, we had three of the four hit us all within the week with inquiries about this. And with that in mind, I decided, well, I better look at our policy in terms of what it says about this. And so when I went to look at the policy, I saw that it was a combination policy having to do with mobile dwelling units like RVs and mobile businesses. This policy had lumped these two concepts into the same resolution, I think primarily because they are considered more of a temporary connection, meaning these are structures that are normally connected to water and sewer service by a hose instead of rigid plumbing. These are also on wheels, which I think further puts emphasis on the term temporary. I don't think we define temporary very good in the resolution, but I think that's why that they were brought into the same policy. My concern about that is these are really two completely separate issues. And not only is one a business versus residential, but I know from experience that just in general, whether it's county policy or public works utility policy, and I've seen this in other places, that you generally try, it's generally frowned upon, and you generally try to disincentivize people to take up permanent residence on a residentially zoned property in an RV. So I know that the restrictions of doing that, the bar is set pretty high for that in terms of even our own policy says we don't allow temporary connections. The other thing that really, in my mind, nullifies a lot of our existing policy is that when the county decided to allow ADUs, they flat out forbid mobile dwelling units from being considered an ADU. And so with that in mind, there's also a concept in our current policy called primary and secondary connections. So a primary connection is the water and sewer connection to the initial dwelling on the property. You know, they paid SDCs, they had a water meter. If it's a commercial establishment, they now have a commercial account. If it's residential, residential. But if there's a primary, then the secondary connection, as mentioned in this policy, is this will be a secondary connection to the primary connection, right? So if the county is not even going to allow RVs as ADUs, then what potential purpose or what possibility is there really going to be of a secondary connection to an RV within our service area? So in that regard, I think that it nullifies a key concept in our existing policy. I will say that there is one example that hasn't been well defined, and I put a call into the county on this, but the county has not responded yet, is will the county allow an RV to be connected as a primary connection? For example, got an undeveloped lot, and it's the first thing that's going to be put on the lot. Well, and in a case like that, you know, certainly SDCs and all that stuff would have to apply because it's the first primary connection. But what's weird to me is hypothesizing that that might be allowed seems strange to me, because why would the county not allow RVs as a secondary or as an ADU or a secondary connection, but then they might allow them as a primary connection?
Well, I have a comment here at this time. I was going over the county's ADU ordinance And they did say your comment about using an RV, and they had, as far as an ADU is concerned, so I would assume that would also be considered as a permanent RV also. It kind of makes reference to manufactured homes. And it actually says the design. An ADU shall be set on a permanent foundation. Have any wheels, tongues, and running gear removed.
Right.
So that kind of, you know, having an RV like that would probably be the same thing as a permanent dwelling or a manufactured home if they take the tongue and...
If they take the wheels off, they take the tongue off, they take the running gear off.
It's not mobile anymore.
And then they set it on a permanent foundation. Right. Then it would be allowed, but who's going to do that?
Well, and I know in the past, you know, and this is a while ago, if people were going to build a new house, it was common for them to live in a motorhome on their property for sometimes a year, 2 years at a time.
Yeah.
And I think that is provided for in the land use laws, but it is temporary.
Until the house is complete.
I think there are time limits on what can be done there. And basically, that's part of the conversation you'll have with the county, I'm sure.
Yeah. And in that case, it wouldn't be a secondary connection anyway.
Right. No.
Temporarily, it'd be the primary connection.
Right.
They'd have a water meter. They'd pay SDCs. They'd open an account. But when the house is built, theoretically, the RV would go from a living structure to a vacation structure, and then the house would now assume the primary water and sewer connection with maybe a slight adjustment to SDCs, in that maybe the SDC rate for an RV would be different from a brick and mortar structure.
A good example.
I'm not sure the anticipation from that scenario is that it would connect to the water sewer system. Then it's on wheels, and you're just temporarily living on it on the property, but you can't do that forever.
Yeah, I know a situation.
SDCs are for the house when they build it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know a situation exactly as you described it. While they rebuilt a house to be livable, they lived in their RV that had two primary water sewer connections, because it was like it was combined. Two lots, I think it was, and they lived in the RV, and it was like 6 months while they refurbished the house. So that does happen.
But it was two lots and two. See, there's a danger here in these conversations of getting too specific and too many details.
Sure.
And we can't address every possible scenario.
Well, what would you like to see?
Well, I guess in short, if primary connections under these circumstances are allowed from a county standpoint, well, we need a policy about dwelling units. If it's not allowed, we don't really need a policy about dwelling units, because they're not going to be accepted as ADUs. There isn't going to be any secondary connections. We're not going to allow temporary connections, and they're not going to be a primary connection. So it makes me wonder why we need a policy. But understanding this scenario could happen where it's a temporary primary thing, we need a policy. But you know, I originally went to review this policy wanting to know about mobile food trucks, and I quickly saw that now with the ADU rules, that our existing policy for travel trailers and RVs and mobile dwellings needs work too, because a secondary connection is not really ever going to happen based off of my understanding. So even though I started looking this for mobile food carts, I quickly saw that we have a flaw with the mobile dwelling units. So this policy needs to be rewritten. I believe we need separate policies because the possibilities even allowed by the county for connection to food trucks are much greater than for connections to mobile dwelling units or RVs, and that's why we can no longer have them be have the same policies. So I've started to work on rewriting a standalone policy for the dwelling units just because it was kind of the lowest hanging fruit at the time. But because of the interest in mobile food trucks, if we're not going to apply the policies that are in place now because they don't make sense, we need to understand, we need to determine what our policies are going to be for mobile food trucks.
Well, they are allowed in the county.
Yes.
Right now. I mean, there's a brand new one in Garibaldi. There's three or four trucks.
So what kind of a connection does a food truck need? Well, I mean, they're not getting a regular connection.
Well,
they can.
They can.
Well, they could. But
they can.
But they do in Portland.
Yeah.
They connect to the water sewer system in Portland.
Yeah, they have gray water that they, you know, they have to wash dishes and utensils.
I guess I'm just asking the question. Yeah, or is it a full?
Well, food trucks in many ways can be self-contained. Mm-hmm. They've still got a freshwater holding tank the way RVs do. Right. You know, they've got a gray water holding tank the way RVs do. Yeah. So, you know, in some applications, they can be just self-contained. And people can just refill their freshwater tank with a garden hose whenever they want. And we would never put a policy through that people, before they left on vacation, couldn't use their hose to fill up their RV.
Right.
So, one of the things that struck me is the way our policy is written now, and I gave the board four scenarios that I know we need a different policy for mobile food trucks, because the way the policy is written, trying to apply the high bar for mobile dwelling units to mobile businesses would, based on my interpretation of the existing ordinance, of all the scenarios I gave, it would have required a separate water and sewer connection, a separate water and sewer SDC, and a separate account for every single food truck that of the scenarios I gave you based on our current policy. So we need a new policy. I'd like to see the policy not be so restrictive. I can understand why mobile dwellings have a higher bar, but I don't think we want to apply that high bar to businesses and people that, you know, want to engage in commerce in our community.
Well, and if the cost to them becomes too high, they're not going to be able to do that.
That's their major question.
Yeah, that's a huge expense.
Yeah, if they're going to pay that $28,000 to get, you know, if the trucks don't have that kind of profit margin.
No.
Especially if they're only going to be open for a few months a year during tourist season.
Well, and also think about this. I think anybody that embarks on this in Pacific City for the first time is taking a business gamble as to whether that business is even going to succeed.
And all four of the scenarios you mentioned to us, they are all on commercial property right now, correct?
Well, I don't know. We've got a scenario where we've got a home and a business that share the same building, and they want to add one to.
But it's zoned commercial.
Oh, it is zoned commercial.
It's zoned commercial.
And then the issue about a potential parking in an RV park, I assume, would be commercial too.
That one's commercial too.
Okay, so these would be all commercial.
All four of those lots are commercial.
Okay.
I think that makes it easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From what little reading I've done of it, too, about mobile food trucks, there are different classes of them, and not all of them include actual cooking. A lot of them are assembling food and for selling in a box something like that. But those, I think it was class four, that do provide for cooking require grease traps.
Yep.
And so that is part of the equation too when we try to figure out what we can connect to us, and you already know all about grease traps because we have restaurants that have those requirements. So it's complicated. I will look forward to your proposed.
Yeah, well, and you know, I brought this up, you know, in case the board wanted to talk about what our potential policy is. If you'd like me to take a stab at it and see if the board approves, maybe that's the best way to approach it.
You're the one with the experience in all of this.
Yeah. I think, like you said, there was one that went in Jeroboam View.
Yes.
So what kind of policy do they have?
I tried to call Garibaldi and didn't get called back. I did call Lincoln City, even though they're not in our county.
Yeah.
I do know there's a lot of these in Lincoln City, too.
Tillamook has a couple of places that have a group of them. And,
yeah.
I mean, there are examples all over the place.
There are.
That you might have when you're drafting something.
And in general, what I can tell you, is that if there's somebody wants to create what they call a food truck pod, meaning it's three or four or five food trucks. On the same property, usually these are undeveloped lots that somebody just, you know, puts four or five on. Typically, that's one service connection and one SDC, for both water and sewer, and it supplies the whole pod. In another case here, we've got three commercial businesses on a single water service, and all they want to do is add a fourth one. And my thought is, well, why would we make them pay all that extra money to add a fourth business on the service line just because it has wheels?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So these are, just to give you a preliminary indication of my line of thinking about this. I think if a food truck is the first use of the property, it pays SDCs. If it's in addition to other businesses on the property, I think we need to be open to allowing them to connect to the existing plumbing that is already on the property. And so, you know, that's just a glimpse into my mindset.
Yeah.
So unless the board feels I'm totally off base and would like to steer me in a different direction before I put pen to paper, that's probably going to kind of be the tone of a policy I would write.
So what kind of timeline were these people that talked to you thinking of?
Fast.
There's one already in place. There's one ready to be in place tomorrow.
You know more than I do.
In place? Where?
I don't know if I'm just saying.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't know that.
The one at Range Resort's already there.
Is it operational?
They've got a business license for the county.
Well,
I'd say so.
It could be one that doesn't require hook up to water sewer.
It's parked in an RV parking space that would have an RV.
And already had SDCs paid for that RV spot.
And already had SDCs paid for and may not require sewer service.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
is it operational? Is there? Are they?
I know that they're thinking about it. I don't think it's.
Well, I knew it was going to happen fast. I didn't know it was going to happen this fast, and
I'm not surprised.
I still wish that communication with them.
They never called us.
Yeah.
About it.
I think we need to tell them until we get this policy in place that I'm sorry, you can't operate until we.
Well, in this case,
have the jurisdiction
that
to
maybe,
do that.
Yeah, we do. That may be. Yeah, I think we should let John continue his train of thought and deal with it.
Yeah.
Because he's the one with the experience.
Well, I appreciate that. I will address it. I will
figure it out.
Because
they've already got the business license and everything. Right?
Well, I mean, if they weren't there, an RV would be there because the CC's already there.
So in this case, I feel better by the fact that SDC's have already been paid. I'd still like to know the nature of, you know, because in case they do need a grease trap.
Yes.
Or how are they connected?
Well.
Yeah. So I will check.
If what they're doing required county assuring that there was water sewer sign off on it, we would have heard about it.
Yeah.
So
I think
before we make too many speculations about what's happening, we should just deal with what is happening and let you take it from here.
That sounds like a good plan. So I will do my, well, because things are happening fast and furious, I will have a policy for the board to review no later than our next meeting. And so that was really both items A and B on the new business for the agenda.
Maybe because we're kind of on a time frame too. If you do get something together, maybe you could shoot it out to us before the meeting, and then we can kind of look at it.
Well, and if we're all available for a special meeting,
or we something, might, yeah.
That would be
good. We could do a quick special meeting on that one topic.
Yeah. And that might be a good idea if I can get this done.
I mean, the summer's here.
So,
we want to be able to respond responsibly to people that inquire, and we want to have a rational answer.
I'll expedite this, and if you guys are open to that, I think it would be great if the board could expedite it, too.
I would say the sooner the better.
Okay. Yeah. And knowing this, I'm not going to try to finish up the travel trailer one. I'm going straight to the food trailer one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, go to that.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, John.
Yeah.
Okay, under new business, we have a couple of things here. Oregon Coast Bank signatories, as we have new, every time we have a new director, we all have to go, and even though they've already have our signatures on board, we still have to sign a new form or two.
Okay.
I'll make a motion if you are, unless there's...
Does it require a motion, please?
Does it require?
It does require a motion.
Oh, that I didn't know. Go ahead.
I'll move that we, prior to making the motion, in the manager's note, it was noted that Director Gogas needed to be removed. Director Gogas was not a signer by declination.
I don't know,
did we actually remove Director Gogas' name from the permission list?
So it's
Sean Carlton that is gone now that we need to actually remove. So that's the reason for my motion sounding different. I'll move that we remove Director Carlton and add Director Anderson to the, and confirm that going forward, the authorized signers on the Oregon Coast Bank accounts will be Directors Donahue, Starostka, Anderson and Price, and Authority Manager Wesley.
I'll second that motion.
So we have a motion and a second to change the signatures on our Oregon Coast Bank accounts. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Do I vote for myself?
No nays.
Thank you for that catch, too. I thought I had the most recent one in mind, so...
Yeah, I clarified that with Rochelle this afternoon because it didn't sound...
Our TLC Federal Credit Union account, where are we at with that, Rochelle?
We are all paid off. We have $6 and like 50 cents in the bank account.
Wow.
It's a savings account.
I think we ought to close it.
Well, and I can add, too, because I've talked to them, because for the longest time we thought this was a line of credit. And you might recall we were even considering spending some money and maintaining the line of credit. This was a loan, and it was an unsecured loan.
Right.
And it was a low interest loan as well.
When I
reached out to TLC Federal Credit Union some months back to talk to them about our line of credit, that's when they told me, no, this is a loan. And by the way, you'll never be offered another unsecured loan, especially at this interest rate again. So, it doesn't sound like there's, in my view, a lot of reason.
Before we paid it off, didn't we?
That's
come
right.
On.
That's
we're
right.
Late on payment.
There you go. No, I understand. Yeah. Okay.
So what do you guys think we should do?
Close it.
I think we have to just close that account.
Do we need a motion or anything? Or
it wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt.
They might want minutes on that.
Well, I'll move that. I'll make a motion that we close the TLC Federal Credit Union account that is now, the loan is paid off.
This is a savings.
And it's just a savings account.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to close the TLC Federal Credit Union account. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
So Ann, John, and Tom are all signers on that one, so you guys might all have to go sign it like this as we're going to close it.
Oh, pardon me?
All three of you are signers on that account, so you may have to go and sign something, but I'm sure John will be able to call them and say, what's the process?
And I think Sean was a signer on it, too. We might have to pull him out of the woodwork to sign something, even though he's not a director anymore. So we're going to need to clarify that.
And the closest one is Tillamook, is that right? Okay. Okay. All right.
All right. We're done with new business. Item 9, guest questions and comments. Do you have anything, Darren? How about you, Tim? Thank you. All right. The chair or director comments? Do we have any? Ann?
I have one. This is regarding the rules of conduct, and the purpose of our board meetings is to conduct the business of PCJWSA, and our meetings are therefore not an open community forum. So, for political statements. So, I'd like to suggest that the board consider a revision to the rules of conduct to reflect that.
Will there be no political statements?
Correct.
Good idea.
Since that's just a comment, we can discuss it at the next meeting and decide whatever we want.
Any comments?
No, yeah, that's good idea. Good idea.
Okay, since this was under director chair comments, we probably should put it on agenda.
Correct. It needs to be on the agenda. So
for next.
We can't have a full discussion of it right now. It's just my comment.
Thank you. I only have one comment also. The person who just got that new certification, please offer the board's, I think I speak for all here, offer the board's congratulations and thank you.
Thank you. I'll let them know. It's Robert Pippinger.
Mm-hmm. Robert? Okay. Are there...
And welcome to our new employee.
So we've talked at a couple of meetings about having a board staff picnic, barbecue, mm-hmm. something. I would really like to see that happen sometime this summer so that not only the staff knows who the board is, but the board knows who the staff are. I think... Sometimes it feels like it's them and us, and it shouldn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And so, John, could you and
would
Michelle,
you like me to propose a date, a couple of dates?
Yeah.
Okay. Throw a couple of dates out.
Well, let me check our calendar, and I will get back to the board with a couple of proposed dates.
There's quite a few guys taking vacations over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. But we'll. You know, summer would be a good time, and, although that is a time where people do take their vacations, but I'll look for a couple of periods where nobody has put in a request
yet. Even if you got into September, it'd be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's still weather-wise, it's gonna be nice weather. So. Yeah. And summer's kind of busy for everybody. I mean, maybe just give us some dates that if... I'm not opposed.
Let's nail it down.
Yeah. And do you guys like the potluck concept?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds great. I will do that. I'll get back to you guys within the next week or so with some options.
And, perhaps we're not going to have 100% attendance, but the majority of the staff and board are able to attend.
Yeah. I think, that would be great. And I think the staff would appreciate that, too.
Good.
All right. If there are no other comments, it is now 6:20 p.m. This meeting is adjourned.